Okay.
Whoa, you've got a speaker.
The call to order, the meeting of the Oceana Community Service District Board of Directors, Wednesday, February 28th, 5:30 p.m. Roll call, please.
Director Burney.
Here.
Director Angela.
Here.
Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
President Wink.
Here. Want to stand for the flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. James, you need to get some water?
I'm choking up. It was the flag salute.
Thank you. May we have the agenda reviewed? What's Ms. Casiola?
President White, members of the board, we have modified our recommendations in item 8B. We have provided a modified staff report with the item that has been removed from disbursement. Check 56816 to Everywhere Right Now for the website for $2,000 has been removed and voided until the final website has been approved and launched. This adjustment will decrease the total cash disbursements from $118,936.17 to $116,936.17. So at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for the approval of staff recommendations in 8B as modified.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
I move.
Do we approve the agenda?
Approve the agenda.
I'll second.
Review.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to closed session. We have our attorney give us report on closed session, then we'll call for public comment.
Thank you. Following public comment, the board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D2, conference with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. There's one matter. Item 5B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria et al.
Thank you very much. Public comment? Seeing no one come forward, we'll adjourn to closed session. Call the regular meeting of the Oceana Community Service District back into general session at 6:38. We'd have a report from closed session, please.
The report from closed session is no reportable action.
Okie dokie. Let's move on to item 6, public comment of items not on the agenda. The public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district and are not listed on the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes, and I have two people who would like to comment. Let's call Ryan Whiteside up first. Thank you for using the forms. It's helpful.
Well, I would. I'm just here to express opposition to any new oil well drilling. I understand Price Canyon wants to drill over 400, close to 500 wells. So I'm in strong opposition to that, as well as any fracking operations too. I'm opposed to that strongly. Basically, I would like to just see this community and the, you know, this community and larger communities move towards renewable energy that can last a lot longer, is a lot safer. As far as the offshore drilling, I understand that the state only has control over 3 miles, and then, you know, Trump can do whatever he wants with the rest of the federal waters, but the state can certainly stop the piping that's required for for easy access for those oil rigs to get the oil to land. So there are measures the state can do to make it very difficult and unprofitable for oil companies to come in and try to do offshore drilling that Trump is, and Zinke are, their energy dominance, which is kind of ludicrous because, it's a finite resource. It's just getting harder and harder to extract, and more dangerous, more opportunities for spills, leaks, all kinds of stuff. And it's happened in the past. There's no reason it won't happen again. It's just kind of not when, but if. So I'd like to keep the oil in the ground as much as possible. And that's just my position. And I think this community's done a really good job with a lot of solar. There's tons of solar on roofs out here. There's, I think the huge project out in the Carrizo Plains. There's probably some wind around. There's a lot of progress going, and it can't be stopped. It's moving forward. It's getting cheaper, and it goes on forever. The wind and the sun will always be. I mean, they'll be there far longer than any oil deposits that are in the ground. Thank you. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you. Mr. Varney?
Excuse me. Charles Varney from Oceano. I'm here on behalf of Surfrider to encourage the Community Services District to join their colleagues across the county, Morro Bay City Council, Cambria CSD, Los Osos CSD, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, in adopting a resolution in opposition to offshore oil development. As a beach community, we certainly are in the first line of threat of any spills, and I would encourage you to go on record against this. The time for formal comment ends March 9th, but even if you can't meet that deadline, it would be a good thing to do. And I have some examples of resolutions from the State Lands Commission that were sent to the Bureau of Offshore Energy Management that you might use to inform your own letter. And I'll leave these over here. Yesterday, I attended the County Water Department Agency's presentation on state-mandated groundwater management plans, and I learned that they are proposing to make Price Canyon its own sub-basin, and because there's no evidence of water from the Santa Maria Basin going in up Price Canyon. And I asked them, I said I was concerned about water coming down Price Canyon into the groundwater basin. In particular, I'm very concerned about the Arroyo Grande oil field and the practice they have of deep well injection of petroleum wastewater and waste products, particularly in light of the proposed 481 well expansion that's coming up there. And I said, so how are you looking at this in terms of planning and in terms of water quality issues? And they said, we haven't really considered that. So given that this is the county's groundwater management plan and that we're downstream from that, and anything that would come in down Price Canyon would get into the part of the Santa Maria groundwater basin that underlies us and our wells, I think that we have a real important interest in bringing this to light and making it much more obvious and evident, and call on some more, either whether it needs more research, but it certainly needs to be seen as an important issue around groundwater management.
Thank you. Bonita Ernst?
Bonita Ernst, Oceana, California. I have three topics, so I'll keep them pretty quick. First of all, we wanted to let folks know that there's a new association forming. It's currently called the Oceano Beach Community Association. The unofficial mission is to simply make Oceano a better place. It's very much in the beginning stages, working on a Facebook page and the website are in the works. Mainly people would, we'd like people to get involved first before we get too caught up in 501c3 and all that sort of stuff. Some of the items that are important to the people involved at this time are the trash and the weeds, the code enforcement, the empty blighted buildings such as the casino and the fish and chips place and the house next door to the fish and chips place, sidewalks, and of course the revitalization plan of 2013. So some big issues, and we hope to get other residents involved, and I think the website will be oceanobeachca.org, or it's oceanobeach.org, but it'll be out soon. Topic number two I have is this flyer that I got from the OCSD about a year ago, and I talked to Paavo actually in April at the Day of the Child, and it sounded like they had four great new solid waste programs: Adopt a Can, Adopt an Alley, Neighborhood Cleanup, and Smartphone App. And I think I've checked a few times. It sounded like the person that was heading them up disappeared or went away or whatever, and they said they were looking for a new one once. And so I called yesterday and I said, do you have a new one yet? No, we don't have a new one. Are you actively looking for somebody to head this program up? No, we're not. So I'm just wondering what the status update is. It sounds like great programs. So it's sort of like to know what's going on a year later, which leads into, and if you need free advertising, try next door, try it with the Grover Beach Police Department, uses it all the time, Craigslist, the volunteer match website, emails, put a flyer in the front door, put it on your website. I mean, I think there's lots of ways to advertise that you're looking for such a person, even if it's a volunteer. It'd be great to see it happen. Number three is the OCSD neighborhood cleanup policy, because one of the things we mentioned was trash and weeds. And in researching that, I actually researched that about 6 months ago and got a 13-page Oceano Community Service neighborhood cleanup policy. It involves, it's 13 pages long. It involves petitioning homes on a block of interest, attending a safety meeting, filling out an application, waivers. It's extremely thorough. It's very well done. It's totally useless. Nobody has used it. No organization has used it. The goal, number one goal, is increased community involvement.
Thank you.
Madam President, members of the board, quick responses. With respect to, you know, the comments on oil drilling and renewable energy, there have been other issues in front of your board that aren't under the direct jurisdiction of your board, and based on, you know, what our priorities are, your board has refrained from acting on items that are not within your jurisdiction in the past. But I do want to speak to the renewable energy. And that was, we had a meeting today with the county. They've been awarded the Zero Net Energy grant program for Oceano, which is about a $300,000+ program to evaluate community zero net energy, which includes the renewables. They expect on March 6th to have their consultant contract on the Board of Supervisors agenda, and we're going to continue to coordinate with them on that energy evaluation. So the good news is we are directly involved with the county's efforts for renewable energy and what the future might hold for Oceano. With respect to the solid waste efforts, yes, it's true that I need to get on to recruitment. Your board did approve the position for the district, and that will provide us the ability to proceed. I'll cover in a little bit more detail during discussion of board priorities, because that's, you know, really what it's come down to is limited number of staff and everything that we have in front of us. But the direction to move forward with filling that position is still there, and we will be doing so in the near future. With regard to the neighborhood cleanup program, when your board adopted it, it was recognized that that is really a program that's available for property owners and the public, but it's still one that has to be initiated by property owners and the public. So that's with a staff member on board, we will be able to do more outreach so that people understand that program is available. But still, it requires initiation. And then the last point on there with regard to some of the litter problems that we have seen, we are working on, and we've worked with legal counsel, on formal notices and potential fines to levy against property owners who are not bringing in their containers and who are allowing litter to accumulate in front of their property owner. And we have plenty of pictures that support some of the public testimony today regarding some of those problems that are happening. So we've been working with legal counsel to confirm our approach with property owners in that situation. So some of that work effort isn't, you know, apparent, but it is ongoing. And so that addresses some of my comments to in response to public comment.
Thank you. Moving on to special presentations and reports, staff reports. I see Field Supervisor Tony Maraschino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino. You know, it's been a little while since we've gone over this, but we've had 12 work orders, 13 USAs, 11 customer service calls. We had 4 after-hours call-outs. One was for a SSO that occurred at 1761 Beach. This is a known hotspot on a lateral. So this has been occurring more and more often. We do try to maintain it the best of our ability, getting out there once a month, but there's 4 units on one lateral. It's got a severe belly. So to prevent us from going out there and maintaining it, we actually potholed the beginning of the belly and the end of the belly to get the depth. And it actually got surveyed this week, so we'll get the results to ensure point A to point B can be replaced with the straight line and have enough fall so we don't have to maintain this area and we won't have any more SSOs. It's just you got too many homes on one lateral with a severe belly. So either we're going to replace it or we'll look at what a contractor can replace it for. It's going to get replaced so we don't have to deal with this issue anymore. Of us maintaining it monthly. It's real bad belly. It needs to get replaced, bottom line. Another call-out was an after-hours turn-on that was currently locked off. Another call-out was for water running down the street. Come to find out, once we showed up on scene, it was a customer side that was busted. So all we did is shut it off, and they got a plumber to get it repaired. Okay, got another call out. Neighbors called on a neighbor doing dirt work, concerned that their water and sewer was going to be hit. Basically, once they showed up on scene, the developer had all his permits, and he was allowed to do the dirt work. It was an elderly couple. They were upset that he was making noise on the weekend. Nothing that we can get involved with. Their sewer and lateral was not in danger. Pointed them to the county because the county is the one that does the building here. We had meter reads. We have been doing trash pickups. Since December, we filled up probably 3, maybe 4 roll-offs. So we do, once we are aware of a few locations, we go out there with the loader dump truck, sweep up beds, couches, and fill up these roll-offs and get them off and get new ones. So in the last 3 months, we've had three or four roll-offs filled up and gone. Common codes for highs, lows, leaks. Repaired an irrigation in front of the fire station. We're still continuing to do meter changeouts. We had our two well, our reservoirs, our million-gallon and 300,000-gallon tanks dived, cleaned, videoed, vacuumed, and inspected on the inside. This occurs once every 5 years to ensure the coating and whatever sediment is in there, we get it out. The tanks stay online, they vacuum it, and so there's no more sedimentation down inside there. Inside of the interior, it looks good. The videos are neat to watch. I got them on a thumb drive, and I also got them on DVDs if you ever want to look at them. We had a VFD. Our primary booster is on a VFD, a variable frequency drive, which when our system, Lopez, is not meeting the demand, a VFD will kick on and pulls water from the tanks, and it just keeps system pressure. So we had a VFD basically blow up on us. And no big deal because we got two other boosters in there. It was an old VFD. We've had issues with it. It's lived its life. We got a new VFD. Should be showing up next week, and it'll be installed for a little under $4,000 installation purchase for it. So that'll be taken care of. We had a water line break at Truman and North Swing. This is a 1-inch steel line from 1952. It's right next to the duck pond. Vice President was there. She's seen it. The water coming out of the street. So 1952 steel line, it's corroded. It's anywhere from 1 inch to 2 inches in diameter. We put a repair clamp on it, stopped the leak. A day later, the leak appeared again. So basically, what happened is the repair clamp has rubber gaskets in there, and it must have settled over the evening, and the water found a way out. So we dug it back up. This time, we ground down the 1-inch steel line the best we could, put the repair clamp on it. We didn't backfill it this time. We road plated it and waited a week to see if it would hold. And it actually did. The only other options we have is to cut a section out and hope that we can put some couplings on it with something new, but you still run into the problem with the ceiling. But it is addressed. It is in our 2009 master water plan to replace this water line due to the size and the age. So, you know, we learned a little bit on that one. You don't immediately bury it.
One more year, it's got to last. Another year and a half.
Another year and a half?
It's got to last another year and a half.
God, I hope it lasts another 50 years. You know? It's lasting as long as it's going to last. We'll be here to repair it if something else happens. Okay. We had to actually hit and run on a hydrant on pier in front of Angelo's, and we did find the initial person that hit it, and that has been paid for. But while the hydrant was off, it got taken out completely. So there was no eyewitnesses on the second hit and run. Hydrant got knocked off. We had the valve off because of the initial time it got hit. We didn't want to be leaking then. Black bagged it like we always do to let the fire department know it's out of service. But about 2 days later, we found it on the ground. All right. Potholed sewer line on beach. Like I told you, we'll get that replaced. Potholed air park for the county job replacement of the bridge. So we potholed the water line to ensure the depth and location. Give that information to our engineer. All right. Yeah, that pretty much covers everything. And let me cover one more thing. This was 2 weeks ago. Lopez was currently, 2 weeks ago, was at 50.6%. Full, which is 24,970 acre feet. We did have the one SSO in January. We're currently taking no state water, all Lopez, and it's at 421 acre feet as of the beginning of the end of last month. And we've only pumped 24 acre feet this year. Here today. Any questions?
How much sedimentation do you get in the tanks?
So after about 5 years of filling up, you'll get maybe a quarter inch to an inch of sedimentation at the bottom. So, you know, it does get picked up. And, you know, if a line ever goes down a little bit on pressure and goes back up, you know, sometimes it can pick up throughout the transmission line. and get put in the tanks. So we do try to maintain that every 5 years and then get it cleaned out and also get it inspected, the coating.
But the, you drain the tank in order to do that, no?
So the tank's full of water. You have a diver that disinfects himself, and they have communication with the diver, a spotter on top of the tank watching the diver, and there's a mobile trailer that has communication. You can actually talk to the diver the whole time. He's got a vacuum, and he just goes around sucking up the sedimentation, the walls, the bottom. And then there's a big bag at the base of the tanks. So it dechlorinates the water, and then it also catches the sedimentation while the dechlorinated water goes down to a drain.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
One question, that fire hydrant that got knocked off, could it be repaired?
You know, I don't know at this time. We've been really busy. Today we had a one-inch service we had to install, and we had to repair another service.
Yeah.
So I don't know for sure. Right now it's just blocked off with cones. We got to check the hydrant. I don't know yet.
I suppose it's okay for a question. That hydrant's been hit about 2 or 3 times. Is there any consideration of relocating it a little bit?
You know, the initial installation of that hydrant was based on county's recommendation. It is a good question to ask, and I would have to bring that up with the county again to see if we can get it relocated.
Does it have the post?
County does not authorize
bollards
to be placed in sidewalks.
So, right. Just for my clarification, Tony, on which hydrant on Pier Avenue, this is the one that was installed originally a year or 2 years ago?
Correct, and it was installed in front of Angelo's ATV shop next to the alleyway leading up to a building that was built, a residential area.
So
I don't know if it was residential. I believe it was called a hotel.
It's residential. So the installation was a condition of a land use permit that was issued by the county. To the extent that it's now the district's facility, your board has discretion to say that we're not going to replace that hydrant. The subsequent discretion about putting a hydrant in a different location would also be yours. I think that the appropriate approach is we'd obviously have to have it on an agenda. But the appropriate approach would be, since the county, and I've been involved in the discussions, and will not allow the bollards to be installed, the discussion would be, well, if we can't put in the bollards, then we can't have the hydrant anymore, because the safety risk to people, because it's being hit on a repetitive basis. We all have seen fire hydrants and water shooting up high into the air when a fire hydrant is broken, and the typical human reaction is to woo and wah and see that water shoot up in the air. But the reality is, when that thing breaks and happens, it's a safety issue. And so I think that I can do some correspondence with the county and then schedule it for some subsequent agenda item for your board to consider, as well as what are the technical requirements if we're not going to replace the hydrant.
Where's the next closest hydrant down there?
Next one's on a pier.
On up closer to the liquor store?
After the liquor station on the opposite side, going towards the beach, right next to probably an apartment complex there.
Okay, the one that, because it's been there 2 years, has already been hit twice, so obviously it's not.
It's been hit a lot more than twice.
Yeah.
Has it?
Correct, but there is a distance requirement that we have to meet.
That's what I was thinking.
Or commercial, residential. But it's definitely something to look into and bring it back.
Yes, please do.
Okay, it's right by the driveway. Is it getting hit by those guys that live in the back there?
No, it's not hitting that. How it was taken out was a truck and trailer the last time that we caught somebody.
It was right in the middle of the sidewalk. It probably should go.
So I'll just initiate some staff-to-staff correspondence, do some research on it, and I need to keep Five Cities Fire Authority in the loop as well as County Public Works. And then we'll schedule it for a future agenda item.
Used to be one across the street, down past the candy store.
There still is by the ramp.
Yeah.
Yes, there is still a hydrant there, right past the candy store. Yes.
Okay.
We still have one there.
Three down there. Three right in close proximity. Well, of course you.
Well, they must have thought we needed them.
Well, you couldn't need that many easily. Yeah. Okay. I think we can move on.
Thank you.
And Celia, you'll note that as a future agenda item. Yeah. Thank you.
Moving on, OCSD General Manager, Mr. Ogren. I realize
Madam,
you have a report later.
Yeah, Madam President, a lot of my updates are in the attached report. The one thing I want to mention is the low reservoir response plan that applies to Lopez, where the drought was declared over, at all levels in 2017. But obviously this is one of the driest, if not the driest year on record. The reservoir is still around 50%, but it could be triggered back potentially in fall that we would get down to the 20,000 acre feet in storage. So at Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee, the question was posed to the county about the ability to use our carryover water. So all the agencies have some water in storage at Lopez, and that was originally established during the drought. But with the end of the drought, that storage goes away. The Board of Supervisors last year adopted a resolution that allows us to use our carryover, our stored water, through the end of the current water year, which expires on March 31st. And so the Technical Advisory Committee was interested in whether or not there would be a possibility to, again, roll over our storage so we could use it next water year that starts on April 1st. And I agreed to discuss with the county. The resolution is very clear that, as board adopted by the Board of Supervisors, that the use of any of that stored carryover water ends on March 31st. There's no, flexibility on that issue in terms of existing board action. But what county staff indicated to me verbally is, and I also have some email correspondence on it to support it, but is that they want to go to the board by the end of August of this year to revise the low reservoir response plan. It was adopted in 2014, 2015 or so. And everybody did a real good job of addressing the primary issues. But one of the issues we didn't address was, when the drought is over, what do we get to do with our stored water? So the county staff level right now is proposing revisions that, among other things, would allow us to use the carryover water for two subsequent water years and not just the one in which the drought was declared over. If that was already in the LRP, then we would be able to use the stored water come April 1st, but it's not. So what I'm anticipating is that after the county works through with the consultants to propose revisions, that your board will have a future agenda item if all goes according to the way the county wants to go. And then you would be formally considering a change in that LRRP, as would Rio Grande and Grover Beach and Pismo Beach and County Service Area 12. At that point in time, then, and we have to wait and see to see what kind of proposal would be in front of your board, but then there is the possibility that those revisions would be retroactive, and so that the carryover water would then become available again. All we know right now is, starting on April 1st, we don't have carryover water, and so we'll have our normal Lopez allocation, and then we're going to plan on doing some pumping in order to maintain storage in the state water system. But again, as the summer proceeds, and then hopefully before August, because they want to have it in the Board of Supervisors in August, but potentially in July, you'll have an agenda item to consider modifications of that low reservoir response plan.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Director Angelo, being your first alphabetically.
I didn't have anything, I'm sorry. I didn't make it.
Director Bernay?
I have nothing either.
Director Caldwell?
Nothing from me.
Vice President Austin?
Well, yes, I attended the sanitation, South County Sanitation District, and we didn't have a whole lot went on. We mostly are redoing the policy and procedure manual. We spent a lot of time on that. We'll be continuing that on for the next couple meetings or so. So that was about it.
Is it true that you were appointed as the chair?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Was that last meeting or the meeting?
Yeah.
It was last meeting.
We like that.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess I need to give a couple of reports. Number one, last Friday night, I joined some of my colleagues at the special yearly meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Special Districts Association, and our speaker was from the County Fire Department, or Chief of Cal Fire County Fire Department, and one thing he talked about was amazing mutual aid. There's 12 fire agencies in the county and how they all work together. And he talked about the fire season and explained that the fire season didn't end last year, and the fire season has continued from 2017. And the brush right now, the moisture in the brush right now is equivalent to August, which means we really all need to be very careful. And Dave Church, head of LAFCO, the Local Area Agency Formation Commission, attempted to have an election for an alternate special district representative to LAFCO, but there's 36 or 38 special districts in San Luis County, including a lot of cemetery districts and small, very small districts, much smaller than we even, and only 14 of them showed up, so we couldn't have an election, but it will be held through the mail. But there was two candidates, if I can find the paperwork for this position, and I think at some point we get to vote for them.
That's correct, Madam President. We have received the correspondence from LAFCO, so we'll be able to put it on a future agenda prior to the end of April.
Yeah, and this is for an alternate special districts member for LAFCO, and the candidates are Ed Eby from Nipomo CSD and Dan Burgess from Heritage Ranch CSD. And I brought the paperwork with me. And I also was at a fire meeting, and we talked a lot about budget and strategic planning, and I think we've got some ways to go, but one of the things that kind of at the end of the whole meeting was they talked about identifying financial options for properly funding the Five Cities Fire Authority. After 10 to 11, 2.5 hours, more than 2 hours of discussion, we came up with the need to identify financial options, and I think that's where we're heading. Thank you, and that's my report. Moving on to public comment on special presentations and reports, item C. Oh, that is item C. Anybody has any comments, public comment? Ms. Ernst? No public comment? Okay, thank you. Moving on to consent agenda items. And there again, I'll call for public comment. Do I have a motion?
I'll move that we approve the consent agenda, including the amendment to the cash disbursements.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to business items. Again, calling for public comment, and then moving on to review of the district's reserve analysis. Well, this budget stuff amazes me.
Just for clarification, President White, were you seeking public comment on both business items up front, or?
On both business items, I'm sorry. Too much paperwork. Okay, review of district reserve analysis.
Madam President, members of the board, I'm going to cover both of the business items today. The first one I would anticipate is going to be relatively quicker, even though it's got more paper associated with it. And the second one will probably be a little bit lengthy because it's got more topics associated with it. Before I begin, I want to really make sure to compliment our business and accounting manager in terms of the work effort on this reserve analysis. This is the first of this nature that the district has had performed or prepared since I've been with the district. And after a lot of work that Ms. Cassiola did, then I was able to review it, and we were able to put together this agenda item and finish it up. But certainly the vast majority of the work goes to the credit of Ms. Cassiola. The main point of this work effort is really determining budget reserves. And what we'll walk through, is how is that done from financial statements and then ultimately audits. And that's where I'll just use a couple of the worksheets to show how we go about doing that. But essentially, it's calculating what we call modified working capital. So working capital, in its basic definition, is current assets and current liabilities. And it's that working capital that's available for the district to fund next year's budget or to fund the budget. It's how much money we have in the bank, in a way, today. But it's modified working capital because it includes accounts receivable and accounts payable. And I'll walk through that in a minute. But it's definitely different than what we term equity to be from a financial statement or an audit statement. But we do are able now to take financial statements and translate them into how we have, how much money, what our reserves are for budgetary purposes. The secondary point is we haven't been able to do it prior to now because of how the previous the sheriff's building was previously treated. We had to go through that 15-year analysis of the funding of the sheriff's facility, how much was paid for by the water fund and by the sewer fund, and how much money have they gotten back. And that audit was completed last November. So since that's been completed and those were the biggest dollars associated with the district's history, now we have the opportunity to do this more detailed reserve analysis. Ms. Cassiola has also started the audit for last fiscal year, and the new firm has been engaged this week, and they're going to be in the office next week. So there's always a possibility that some of these numbers will change at the conclusion of the audit, but any of those changes are really going to be very minor as compared to what we're looking at today. So you'll see in the staff report that we have some really significant changes to our reserve numbers, and the vast majority of them, and overall, they're very good. The reason why we're seeing some big numbers is that prior to all of the adjustments associated with the sheriff's building and the interfund debt, I essentially just had to make some pretty conservative assumptions on our reserve status. And so we're seeing numbers that are larger, and for the most part, it's good news. I want to walk through a couple of examples of what are the differences between the audited statements and what for budgetary purposes. So for example, when we do principal repayments on debt, in an accounting world, when you pay down debt, that's not an expense. You're just paying back a loan. It's not like paying salaries or other things. But from a budgetary standpoint, it is. And so, therefore, any of that interfund debt that we have gets excluded from the calculations of financial reserves. the financial reporting that we're doing associated with GASB 68, which is a bunch of accounting stuff, doesn't affect our budgets, because what affects our budget is the increase in contributions that are required for CalPERS. Bottom line is that the measurement focus on how we're looking at reserves for budgetary purposes is different from financial reporting. And in order to walk through those examples, I want to move just real quickly to page 18 and page 19 of 47. And Lori, I can see, I think you're one more page.
I just looked down at it and went, okay.
So on page 18, what we have is two major groupings, the governmental fund and the facilities fund, and both of them are really general fund. And for each of them, there's a column that's called FTR, which is the financial transactions report, and that's the report that Carrie finished up a couple weeks ago and submitted to the state controller's office. And essentially, those are numbers still that we would expect the audit to be final numbers for audit, even though, again, we might have some minor adjustments. The second column, the MWC, is the modified working capital. So when we look at our assets and our liabilities, you can see which ones in our financial transaction report or our audit reports translate into modified working capital. The easiest ones to see are not included in modified working capital are land, buildings and improvements, equipment, software, and depreciation. So total capital assets in the governmental fund is about $1.7 million. And one page prior, Lori. Oh, no, on the I'm sorry, it's double-sided. Right there. But for modified working capital, it's a zero, because you know, this land and the buildings and everything that we have in capital assets, those aren't available to fund the budget next year. And you can look at the various items. So the items associated with GASB 68 have numbers under financial transactions report, but it's a zero for modified working capital, because again, even though we have concerns on pensions and we know there's unfunded liabilities, those hit the budget as a result of increasing pension contributions, and this liability doesn't. Now, as that is an example, we could look at our unfunded liabilities from a pension standpoint and say, hey, we want to set up budgetary reserves for those, because then as the increase in contributions occur in future years, we've already got it covered and we won't have as big of a budgetary impact. That's really then part of when we enter into discussions for the next budget cycle. To what extent does your board want to push money into some reserves in order to cover either future costs or other types of needs? But from the basic standpoint of what do we have in reserves today, those types of assets and liabilities of GASB 68 don't translate over to the budget. And any reserve designations in the future are discretionary to your board. Similarly, when we see some accounts there for due from other funds or due to other funds, which are our inner fund liabilities and other types of debt, those don't affect reserves either, because each year we budget for the debt payments in each of the funds. And so, you know, on the bottom line, on the governmental fund, we have just over $2 million in total equity for financial reporting purposes. And we've got about $473,000 in financial reserves that are available to fund budgets. And typically that's the case. We'll have some assets that simply aren't available to help fund the budget, and so they're excluded. So this is the type of worksheet that we can go through, and we're basically going to be doing it every year to reconcile, to make sure we're reconciling the financial statements and the audit to what our budget is. And this is the first time we've been able to do it because of the need to clean up all the interfund debt and the need to clean up the historical treatment of the sheriff's building. The next page, which is page 19 of 47, Sort of reiterates that a little bit in terms of the color coding, takes the details associated with our equity, and in that brownish mauve color, that's all of the equity that just doesn't translate to the budget at all. And then the green is portions of equity that were encumbered from the prior year budget, and they were approved by your board last year. So we had a number of different things your board had approved. The money hadn't been spent last year, but commitments had been made. And so we needed to make sure to take that portion of equity, set it aside, and not count it for any of the reserves this year. And that's part of the details of rebudgeting that money as well. And then it shows the portions that aren't color-coded are reflected of the reserve designations that have been previously approved by your board. So it's a very detailed work effort, and normally this type of detail won't be on your board's agenda. It's part of the work effort that we do, and we'll come back and do that reconciliation. Normally the numbers are very small because typically they're adjustments at an audit level, which are normally pretty small numbers. But these ones are big because our financial statements for the end of 2016 showed some pretty significant prior period adjustments. And so those were all disclosed in the financial statements, and then those adjustments now we're showing how we're translating it to budget purposes. On page 3 of the staff report, then, in page 3 and 4, we do the summary. And this is sort of the bottom line, then. So as of the beginning of the fiscal year, for the general fund overall, which includes the facilities fund, we're in a better position by about $76,000. That actually didn't have anything to do with the sheriff's building or anything. At the beginning of the 16-17 year, we had originally proposed $80,000 out of the general fund for the backhoe, and the board's decision was $55,000 was going to be covered by water and garbage and sewer. And when I gave you an updated reserve analysis at the beginning of the year, I just didn't account for that change. And so most of this was just a change because the backhoe is mostly paid for by water and sewer, and so our general fund's a little bit better off than we had anticipated. You see an interfund number of $137,957 between the general fund and the facilities fund, and the staff report comments that essentially when we finished up with that audit, these two numbers between these two funds, they get combined together for the audit, and it I'm not sure exactly what we did on revenues and expenses between the two funds where we're making all those accounting adjustments. But on the bottom line, since they're both governmental, both general funds, it doesn't really matter. When we enter into the budget process for next year, we'll go through the conversation of how much money do you want to have designated over the facilities fund versus how much you're going to keep in the general fund. The details associated with the water, sewer, garbage, and equipment fund are much different since those are enterprise funds. The strict accounting between the different funds is really much more important. And there we have no inter-fund differences. But the water fund is the one where we're showing our reserve balances at being almost $500,000 greater than what we have shown historically. Again, that was predominantly because of the change in the sheriff's building and the amount of funding that the water fund had provided for the sheriff's building. And even though the general fund had loaned money to the water fund, during our whole reclassification, a lot of that got washed out, as well as for the sewer fund. So both the water fund and the sewer fund have better reserve balances because of the conservative assumptions I took prior to going through all of the interfund debt analysis and prior to the audit. The garbage fund is in the opposite direction, and that's because the garbage fund had loaned the water fund about $60,000, and previously I treated that as a current asset, and it indicated that the garbage fund was a little bit higher than it should have been. The garbage fund is still going to get that $60,000. It's just going to get it over multiple years, and that revenue stream is incorporated into the garbage fund budget. So the garbage fund isn't losing any money. It's just going to get the money back over multiple years rather than being able to assume that it has it today. And then lastly, on the equipment fund, there's a small variance, and that was, again, a component of the reserve analysis back when the budget was approved that we missed. And so that was something that was overlooked, and this is correcting that. But, again, it has really not much of an effect on the overall efforts. The next page, so that's beginning reserves, how they would adjust. And in the next page, the summary table shows how the ending reserves are. And the current year, for example, on general fund, we've had some budget adjustments. We've reduced reserves in order to help fund the self-contained breathing apparatus for the fire department. The facilities fund also spent $20,000 for the re-roofing of the fire station in this building. And then we had adjustments in water, sewer, and garbage relating to predominantly it's the Air Park Drive replacement project and the budgeting for our utility relocations there. Plus the garbage fund is paying. Your board approved an adjustment for the claw on the backhoe. But the bottom line is that the ending reserves are significantly improved. With respect to the governmental fund itself, at the end of the year, we're predicting about $570,000. Of that amount, just over $200,000 is dedicated for the public facilities fees or restricted for public facilities fees. So it's about $370,000. That's the true general fund reserve. And at a prior meeting, I had indicated that that isn't really very much money because we get paid property taxes first time in December, and basically we spend that whole $370,000 for Five Cities Fire Authority before we start collecting. The point there is that when we do, now that we have good reserve numbers, really solid reserve numbers to work with, when we go through the budget cycle next for the upcoming cycle, the idea of establishing minimum reserves and emergency reserves and some of those other basic reserves, we have the ability to do that now. So the governmental fund is tight. Water, sewer, and garbage. Water is at about $1.4 million. Sewer is around $900,000. Garbage is about $283,000. For water and sewer, even though those numbers are looking much improved, considering the magnitude of our deferred infrastructure needs, they're certainly not anything that they're okay. They're stable reserves. They're good reserves. But they won't address all of our unmet needs. The garbage fund is the one where we have good money in order to work on implementing the programs. And the idea that the position was approved by your board to help with that as well. The last thing that I really want to note here, and I'll cover it in the subsequent item a little bit more too, is that the general fund itself owes the water fund about $488,000. I'm sorry. The general fund has a receivable from the water fund about $488,000, but it still owes the sewer fund about $515,000. And so even if all that money had been received and repaid, or if it happened tomorrow, we would see a drop of that $579,000 in total general fund reserves to something that's around $550,000. With the repayment to the sewer fund and the water fund and all that stuff, it's all been approved by your board previously. The loan amortization schedules are all set up. But you still do have the discretion of modifying those loan amortization schedules. The sewer fund's going to be paid back in about 4 years, in which case there's going to be a good increase in revenues for the general fund. And the talk we've had is about facilities and about equipment to dedicate those revenues for. But what I'll talk about in the next agenda item is that the board might want to consider an advance repayment of some of the water fund, especially because the water fund reserves are a lot healthier in order to address the emergency generator project. but that I was really intending on discussing in the next item. And again, want to thank Ms. Cassiola for taking the lead on the analysis. This is great news that we're finally at this point. Again, we're at the point because all of the details associated with the interfund debts and that 15 years of history has been done and it's been audited, and so now we have good numbers really to calculate our reserves on. I would expect some minor adjustments maybe associated with the audit, maybe not. But again, this is these revised ending reserve numbers that we have are finally very good and very reliable.
It's incredible work. Thank you very much, both of you. And it's nice to see there are some reserves. And we know what they are and where they are and where they're supposed to go and where they came from.
Well, you know, when I started 3.5 years ago or before taking the job, I looked at the financial statements, a little bit of what am I getting myself into. And I had literally comfort at that time. I mean, I could just look at the cash balance that the district had and its balance sheet, and I knew that, you know, we had a working situation. It wasn't the deficit that the water fund was facing on an annual basis was concerning, and the interfund loans that were happening were a concern. But the basic financial position of the district was okay. It didn't, like, scare me away or anything. But to know exactly how much each fund had, how much water had, how much sewer had, how much the general fund had, that was less clear. So now it's clear, and now that's been resolved, and we can move forward on that.
Now let's move on to item B, review and discuss district and staff priorities, including consideration of board correspondence on proposed legislation and issues with other agencies and other direction that the board may deem appropriate.
So, Madam President, my thought here is to take each of the major topics one at a time.
Yes.
And so starting with emergency services. Overall, though, these are not in a priority order, and so we'll talk about what's more pressing right now versus what's less pressing, and board feedback, of course, is always appreciated. So under emergency services, there's two primary topics, Five Cities Fire Authority and the Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. Under Five Cities Fire Authority, what's not on the bullet point was something I just received a phone call from. And it appears that the March meeting of LAFCO is going to include a study session on fire services within the county. So Scotty Gelbert, who is county fire chief, I expect Chief Lieberman to be there. Part of this is initiated because LAFCO is currently considering the dissolution of the Cayucas Fire Protection District, and the county will be talking at the Board of Supervisors level about what they will be doing if Cayucas is in fact dissolved. David Church, who's the executive director of LAFCO, has indicated that he's hoping that a LAFCO representative from San Diego County will come up because a few years back they did a major blue ribbon study session and everything, and San Diego County modified their approach to providing fire and emergency services, and it had a lot of effects on unincorporated communities and some of the smaller fire departments. I'm not aware of those details at this point in time, but again, part of David Church's hope at the LAFCO study session is to get somebody up from San Diego County to talk about what they did when they were facing some of the similar situations that we're facing in San Luis Obispo County. So again, LAFCO study session, and I'll make sure to get information out to each of the board members because you all can attend. If you all do attend, then you just, three of you can't sit together and you know, create a conflict with the Brown Act. So no more than two of you next to each other in any location. And that's just, we already know that drill, gone through that a number of times, but all five can attend.
When is that meeting of LAFCO in March?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if it's March 9th or 15th, but I want to say it's March 15th. I'm just not absolutely sure. So I'll get that email out to everybody.
Thank you.
My bullet points are primarily about the Los Osos parcel tax and the Cambria parcel tax, which is going to go on the June of, election, parcel analysis for Oceano. And what this is, quick review, and I'm not sure I have copies for the public too, in case anybody's interested. I give these to you, Tony. So Cambria, okay, so the discussion is, depending on, in recent meetings, it's been indicated that the March meeting of Five Cities Fire Authority is going to include multi-year budget projections. And our hope was is that if the Five Cities Fire Authority Board is going to be looking at changing services, changing staffing, whatever the future direction is, that we'll have some ability to understand what our future commitments to Five Cities Fire might be. And then the question is whether your board might want to consider proposing a special tax to residents within Oceano. And I want to say this is part of our due diligence, part of our homework. Your board hasn't provided any direction formally on a special tax, but I do need to do work in order to make sure that if you're inclined to go down there and talk with the community about that option, how does the discussions at Five Cities Fire Authority translate into a potential tax vote within Oceano? So all I'm going to do here is do a quick comparison, the Los Osos parcel tax and what I handed out on Schedule 2, I mean on Page 2 is called a Schedule of Benefits. And what that really reflects is a formula. So a residential single-family dwelling unit pays 5 units of, and secondary dwelling units are 4, condominiums are 4, apartments are 3, mobile homes are 3. This is a relatively complicated formula in terms of you have to know, we would have to know, land use on every parcel in Oceano in order to implement this. But it certainly provides an approach where the fire tax would differ based on what kind of land use exists. And in Los Osos, they found that to be appropriate because different types of land uses creates different kind of risks and creates different needs for fire service. The approach in Cambria is simply an equal amount, or I shouldn't say equal, but it's parcel-based. I think it's the same charge for vacant and undeveloped property, I mean for developed and undeveloped properties, but I'm not absolutely positive on that. But in Cambria, if it's a parcel that has a store on it or if it's a parcel that has a home on it, they're all charged the same. And under the parcel tax approach in Proposition 218, certainly there's a lot of flexibility in taking different approaches. Under Prop 218, if we're charging service charges or if we're doing assessments, you don't have that kind of flexibility. But in parcel taxes, there is greater flexibility, and part of that is why a two-thirds voter approval is required for parcel taxes. In any case, those are the two different approaches that are either have been or are currently being discussed in the county regarding fire services in other communities. I'm not, in terms of priorities, this month in March, we're really not going to work on anything associated with Five Cities Fire. Because it's March's Five Cities Fire hearing that they're going to talk about budget projections, and then we'll come back in April and we'll pick up our analysis for fire operations. And I think that covers my points there. Under the local hazard mitigation plan, as a reminder, we have a grant allocation from Cal OES and FEMA, and timing has been slipping, and I'm very much concerned about that. The reason timing has been slipping is because the county has also been notified that they're going to likely get a grant for the local hazard mitigation, a multi-jurisdictional LHMP. And what I was hoping to do was simply piggyback on them with our program and have ours incorporated into their work effort. That concept was actually included in our grant application that got approved that says with what we're doing when the county does a multi-jurisdictional plan, then Oceano has the ability to have our local hazard mitigation plan folded into the county's plan. But Cal OES and FEMA have got a lot of work going on right now. They've been moving staffing around. Obviously, you know, the tragedy down in Montecito and Santa Barbara County, as well as up in Santa Rosa, have been causing the state to rededicate a lot of their resources. And as a result, the paperwork's not coming through for the county. So I met with Cal OES. They came down last week. And basically, we need to initiate our work effort. I have the RFP prepared. Your board has previously authorized its distribution, so that'll be out in the next week or so. And basically, on the timing slippage, Cal OES indicated that there's a one-year extension that's allowable, and considering our work of coordinating with the county, that's all but no problem. But again, I need to get moving on that. So that's going to be a March work activity to get that out on the street and get that moving. But it's not my number one right now. So those are the two emergency services items, and board questions or comments? Or
no, but I do think if we let fire slip for a while, it'd give you a little chance to do to work, get started on the local hazard mitigation plan.
Yeah, and that's my thought that March. So Carrie and I have talked. Carrie's priorities right now for March are the audit that is ongoing. And then we've, you know, there's some other accounting details that we need to be addressing. She'll be working on those. And that way, come April, her priority is going to move into the budget process. And so for me, setting aside Five Cities Fire for the time being, working on the LHMP, and then some of the other items that I'll identify will be some of my March priorities.
Yeah.
Moving on to operations, real quickly, I'm going to show the sewer system management plan. We have goals in there that by February 28th of each year, we're supposed to be presenting the results of our statistics and goals on a couple of different items, mostly the sewer system overflow issues. And so Tony's going to do a quick summary on that.
As for goals for the SSMP, Casey Stewart is the lead on the SSMP and the FOG program, everything in here. I just oversee what he reports back to ensure everything's correct. So as for 100% of monthly CWIC reports being submitted accurately on time, yes, they have been for the year. Those are submitted once a month, and if we have an SSO, we do submit that for the month. So it's either a no spill or an incident occurs each month, or multiple incidents can occur, and we document those with CWICs.
And, Tony, can you remind us what CWIC stands for?
California Integrated
Water Quality.
Water Quality. It's a good one. I'll get back to you on that.
But basically, it's the monthly report for the sewer systems.
What are the initials?
California Integrated Water Quality. I don't remember what the S stands for, but I will get back to you on that and get the actual.
And so that's monthly reporting that we provide to the Regional Water Board.
Correct. Monthly, you have to report either you had no spills or if a spill happens, you have to report that. And if we do have an SSO, Casey does submit that information, then I got to go into the system and verify it's correct as the legally responsible operator.
And SSO is our sewer system overflows?
Sewer system management plan.
Yeah.
SSO, sewer system overflows. Correct. So 100% of work orders are completed, documented, and filed in accordance with the SSMP? Yes, they have been. 100% of any reportable spills are submitted in accordance with the reporting requirements? Yes, they have been. 100% of fog inspections are completed on time? As for that, I cannot give you a definite yes or no. So, you know, the Sanitation District does our fog program. Fog is fats, oils, and grease. And I will get this verified to see what was done in 17 for you and bring that back to you. And there are variances because these facilities need to get inspected twice a year. But how the melodrama has a variance, and they get inspected once a year because of what they cook and how they do it. And we'll get back to the board and let you know about the fog inspections for 2017.
And Casey's going to be following up with Fannie tomorrow on
correct.
That?
Correct. To ensure, because they do submit it to us. I just don't have a definite answer for you tonight. But I will bring that back to the report and inform you next board meeting. As for jetting and maintenance, completed and including high maintenance areas, yes, we did meet all requirements last year for jetting the sewer system, meeting the requirements, which is 15 miles a year. We did exceed that. And the high maintenance areas, which we do maintain every 6 months. And the last one is the annual reporting to the board by February 28th, and that's what we're doing today, except for the fog program. I will get that information to you and let you know.
So all of the work efforts that your Tony and Casey and Jason are responsible for were completed 100% consistent with the goals, and Casey is following up with the Sand District for the inspections basically of the restaurants for fat, oil, and grease issues. And that's important to do real quick because this is last week for Fannie.
Yes, what I was told, Fannie is going to be leaving the Sanitation District this Friday.
Regarding the SSMP overall, it requires an audit internal audit every 2 years, so this is our off year. Next year, we'll do so again. And one of the things that Tony has indicated that he'd like to see is a reduction in the how much jetting that we have to do on an annual basis. I think that there's strong arguments to reduce that, but just like during his operations report, he was talking about a lateral with a belly. I think the regional board is going to expect us to correct some of those problems before they're going to agree to reductions in jetting. So we'll be working on both of those, and I'll be commenting on that a little bit more as we proceed. And thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that's the sewer system management plan. Sewer laterals, based on the sewer lateral program direction previously received from the board, and I think I previously reported as well, that the investigation of which parcels have laterals and which don't has been substantially complete. There's a few that may be buried that we're not aware of. But our overall desire to move forward with the sewer lateral program has really been constrained by existing work on other aspects. And so what I'm anticipating is that it's really in next year's budget that we're going to be looking at and recommending to be able to get some help in here to update the sewer master plan to address the lift station and to address the lateral program. We've had money in the budget to hire consultants to do some of that work. But again, I think on the water side, we have the master plan update that's being funded through the grants. Grant availability for sewer funds really isn't there. So I'm going to be working with some of the consultants trying to find out what type of budget allocation might be necessary to get in and have some help on the sewer system. But again, existing workloads, we just don't see how we're going to be able to proceed with some of that sewer system master planning efforts if we don't have some additional support. The guys are just constantly busy out there, whether it's line leaks or other types of system failures. Easements and access, this one is becoming a high priority item because the operators, again, have indicated to me that access to some of the district facilities is impaired. They can't get to some of them. So they're going in March, one of their goals is to give us a list of where they can't get to manholes. And so, for example, over by the airport, there's some properties that used to be vacant and we would be able to walk across to get to some of the manholes. They've been since developed. We didn't really have easements. And where we do believe we have easements are extremely overgrown with brush and whatnot. So that involves right-of-way analysis and trying to figure out what we're going to do where our access is impaired. And so, again, in March, by the end of March, they're going to be providing us a list of of where they have impaired access, and how do we get that incorporated into the budget for next year so that we can address it. Schools, the new lead and copper rules are complete. Tony and the crews have done all the work that they're supposed to do and notified the school districts. So that was in part response to the Flint, Michigan item. And so, again, that one has been finished. Solid waste, as we discussed a little bit in response to public comment, we need to recruit for the vacant position. That advertising will be out again in March, so it's one of the items that I'm going to be able to catch up on in March. The second bullet is the non-compliant storage case. So what are, you know, the overall, again, to reiterate the programs that were adopted were the incentive programs that if interested individuals in the community wanted to do things, then we have the ability to work with them now. Because the other side of it, historically, the district only did enforcement actions. And so that idea of having some incentive programs to go with the enforcement actions, well, we still need to do enforcement, though. And as Tony indicated, that lately, if we find sofas or whatever in the alleyway, we've been doing a lot of work of picking them up, or the garbage company will do them for us. In fact, we've had cases where the garbage company will see stuff, they'll call us, and say, hey, do you want us just to get it because, you know, it's Friday or whatever. So they've been doing a good job of calling us as well when they say things, and we're like, yeah, let's take care of it. But what I'm trying to do here is draw a contrast between when somebody leaves a refrigerator in an alley or a sofa in an alley, we typically will post it and then require them to pick it up. If they don't pick it up, then we can pick it up and we can charge them for it. That's different from the non-compliant storage case where people are not taking their garbage cans and taking it back onto their property. They leave it in the alleyway all week long. And then what happens, whether it's pests or kids or whatever, it gets knocked over and we have a litter problem there. Well, under the existing district ordinance, that's a different kind of a violation and we can fine them. And so the steps associated with how we go about doing that have been important to work on with legal counsel because you don't just send them a fine, right? We have to send them a notice and tell them what's going on, kind of give them some sort of a warning. But, again, we've been drafting a letter for some of those, and I would expect some of those I know we will be sending out some of those initial notices to some of the property owners next week. And then on code enforcement, I say non-garbage because I just addressed garbage. We have multiple cases. But for clarification, again, those are cases for in violation of our code. If people are breaking our facilities, like they're tampering with our curb stops or water shutoff valves, that's not county code enforcement issues. So even though we talk with county code enforcement and then we address some of the county code enforcement issues, like what we've seen on the card room burned down. And so I know President White and I have been following up with the county about their enforcement of that issue. We don't have a formal role there. It's informal. And so the multiple cases I'm talking about are things that are violations of our code and impacts on our facilities, and even though the other land use ones are not our code issues, we are still communicating with the county on those. So on operations, again, part of this is going to is the reality check of what are we able to do with existing staff, and we need to recruit for the new solid waste position. But the sewer system issues and the easement and access issues, we're probably really going to be looking for support from, you know, the private side next fiscal year, similar to what we're doing on the water system right now, but without the benefit of the grant funding. Questions, comments on operations? Capital projects, then, which is where I'm going to be spending a lot of my time in March. The good news on the emergency generator is that the design is done. It's been submitted to county for permitting. The electrical engineer has gotten some of the comments back. We're right now seeking proposals or bids on the generator itself, and then we'll hopefully have those. I indicate that I expect to come back on the 314 agenda, and certainly we can do so. Whether or not we have the recommendation on the procurement of the generator is still going to be seen, because we got to make sure that we're following purchasing policies and seeking out three different bids on generators. And we know one number so far, but we have to get two more. And so we're working on that with the electrical engineer. But again, the design is done, the permit's been submitted. And so we're poised to go with the bidding and construction of that. We'll show a site plan for how that's going to lay out on the property of the other side of the sheriff's building. And then the topic for 314 is going to be funding. And my comment over in the right was that the board may wish to consider a partial advanced repayment of the general fund loan to the water to fund the generator, because our general fund reserves are barely adequate to cover our cash flow until we get property taxes. The water fund does owe the general fund a chunk of money, and that's analogous to pulling from reserves. And the idea that when you pull from reserves, you really should be doing it for one-time expenditures only, and so replacement of the generator. Again, your option to use public facilities funds will exist. Those funds are about $200,000 right now. With the uncertainty of future fire operations, I'm inclined to keep the money in the public facilities fees in case we need it to help support equipment purchases sometime in the near future. And because of the fact that we saw that our water fund reserves are in, you know, a notably better situation than what we had historically assumed. So that's the thought there. On the utility relocations for the County Airport Drive Bridge project, that is my number one work effort right now. The county bid opening is scheduled for April 5th. They're scheduled to advertise next week, and basically they have it open for about 30 days. And for us to do our current district bidding in order to have alternative bids for our permanent relocation work, we want to have our bids in around April 5th, too. We only have to have a two-week advertising period, but I want to get it out as soon as I can. And so I've been working on our contract documents. The district engineer is scheduled for Friday to give me drawings and specifications, and then I'll get contract documents over to Jeff next week so that we're poised to go out to bid pretty soon. And the big benefit of getting all those contract documents together is that it puts us in a position to basically bid out anything down the road. So that's my big work effort right now, and to get that over to Jeff by the beginning of next week. Utility relocation is for the county drainage project. Those are still on hold pending the county getting additional funding for the drainage project, and so we're not certain as to when that timing might proceed. The Water Resource Reliability Program, that's the Canon contract, and we've been doing working with them on getting that contract finaled for the president's signature. Some of that work has been really making sure we're focused on the right scope of work, that we've got all the deliverables lined up to meet the grant conditions. And then there is a lot of work in terms of making sure that the grant conditions are also included in the contract with Canon, because the consultants are responsible for complying with grant conditions as well. And if the consultants don't comply with grant conditions, it puts us at risk of losing the grant funding. So we wanted to make sure that was all incorporated into the contract, and it's all in Canon's hands now for review. We've obviously started doing a little bit of the work on leak detection and providing them information, but the real work effort won't start until we've got that thing signed. And again, it's in their hands. I wanted to... stormwater recharge. So For grant funding purposes, there's a deadline on Friday on concepts, and so I've already submitted something to the county regarding potential stormwater recharge concepts that county that Cannon's going to be working on. But on the right here, I say the general manager will discuss the stormwater recharge concept along Highway 1. And I talked to the county about it, and they're like, yeah, send it in. It might be a fanciful thought. But the idea is the Grand Avenue culvert and drainage pipe that dumps into Metal Creek Lagoon, and we know that it has an influence on the peak flooding that we'll see in the lagoon in certain, because that water just comes, it's directly discharged. So if you imagine Highway 1 as it's coming from Grand Avenue and into Oceano, and you've got the county RV park on the left and you've got state parks on the right, I was thinking to myself one day, you know, the highway should really be on the left, closer to the railroad tracks, and the county's RV park should be on the right, so it's immediately adjacent to state parks, so that anybody who's at that camp can get into the trails and enjoy and get out to the beach. And I talked to Dina Bellman about that, and she's like, that's a great idea. And and I really think it would makes a lot better sense, right? Well, during that whole reconstruction project then, you build a huge subsurface infiltration basin, tie it into that culvert from Grand, and get the water to flow into a big infiltration basin. Once it fills up, then it's going to still go into Metal Creek Lagoon. But that stretch of highway is long, and you could have a huge subsurface culvert or drainage feature in there. I think it would be a landmark project. Now, it might take an act of Congress, or at least the state legislature, in terms of state parks and Caltrans and county and everything else.
You could find the sidewalks, too.
Yeah. But, you know, I figure, okay, I'm going to submit it anyhow. We'll see what happens. But those are the types of concepts, though, that people are supposed to be addressing in order to help get stormwater back into the groundwater basin, to fight seawater intrusion, to the impacts on the lagoons would be great. One is it would have water quality benefits, because then that urban runoff isn't going to be directly going into the lagoons. It would have flooding, because the peak flows would be reduced. And then it would have stormwater and seawater intrusion benefits. So it certainly meets multiple goals associated with integrated regional water management planning. I don't have a lot of optimism, though, that that thing would happen at any time in the near future. Maybe not even my lifetime, but maybe someday.
Next week.
Yeah. Okay, so we covered the Cannon contract. And, so the second bill is RCA funding assistance. And so this is another technical assistance program that the State Water Board has approved for us, where RCAC, Rural California Association of Counties or something like that, I can't remember. But it's a nonprofit, and State Water Board funds them to help especially disadvantaged communities in different work programs. They did the income survey for us in 2017, and what they are now poised to do is help us with funding applications to the State Water Board for our infrastructure. We figured that that was going to process after Cannon completed the capital improvement program updates, but we're getting encouraged to take items off the existing management plan and submit them now. And part of that is based on availability of some of the Proposition 1 money. So I have a conference call with RCAC tomorrow to talk about that. Tony talked about the North Swing water line. That's a 2-inch galvanized pipe, and the inside diameter is probably about the size of a pinky or a pen. So that's a project that would obviously be on there, and we'll see how that works out. But again, we're getting encouraged to apply now and not to wait. It doesn't mean that we can't apply again for a second round in the future, but some of the money that's available isn't going to be available for long. So I'm going to start that effort with RCAC tomorrow, and I'm not sure, again, what might be available, but at least the discussions are going to start. The sewer system CIP effort, I mentioned that a little bit previously, that we're going to be looking at the budget and seeing what we might be able to scope for basically a master update to our master water plan, master sewer plan, focusing in on the deferred infrastructure The lift station is old. We know we need to address that. Line replacements, bellies, and other problem areas that have already been identified. And then the lateral program. At this time on the utility yard site plan, I want to do a couple of handouts. And one. So RRM, the design group has been working on our site plan, and we previously showed three different alternatives on how to work on the utility yard. But when RRM went to work with the county basically said, try again. So what I'm going to hand out here is a little exhibit that the county provided back to RRM. But the bottom line is, as we know, on 19th Street, our water line extends far out into the street. Mm-hmm. And the county says if we're planning on getting any building permits to modify what we have out there, we're going to be giving them the road back. And so what that does is it severely constrains our site. And I was thinking we weren't going to be able to fit anything on the site any longer. So the little 8.5 by 11 was a markup from Glenn Marshall, who's in charge of development, review, and public works, and obviously has the roads responsibilities. And all that really does is showed RRM where the county anticipates sidewalks to be on both sides of 19th Street. And it gave RRM, Pat Blody, then how much room he could work with in evaluating our site. And so then that's where Pat and his associates at RRM came up with the big 8.5 by 11. And they basically have said that in order to get what we need out at the yard, they think they can get it to fit. They need to angle the buildings in order to give enough room both behind and behind and in front. The question right now is, can we really get an 18-wheeler through the back? And it may not. So they're doing the turning radiuses on an 18-wheeler to see if they can get it back. If not, they're also going to identify what's the maximum size commercial vehicle that would be able to make it into the back side of the yard. But between the facilities and Wilmar Avenue, they would be wide into a full-width road. The other idea is we'd be able to pull up an 18-wheeler along the road and unload it from the side and then get the equipment back. So the traffic impacts and some of the circulation of the 18-wheelers is really the issue of greatest concern. The idea of having a drive-through shop, that's not going to work anymore. But it looks like we can still utilize the site. I was really almost coming to the conclusion in my mind we weren't going to be able to have yard offices out at that site. But it looks like RRM is going to be able to fit them in there. And I would imagine that Glenn Marshall is doing a little bit of flexibility because if he's there, you know, the county is really looking to get 19th Street back into a condition, much better condition than it's in right now. And from my perspective, it's really hard to argue with that because it's poorly laid out right now. And I think that when we see the meandering nature of that sidewalk, the county is trying to accommodate us to the degree that they can so that we can continue to use that site for our water yard. Because if that sidewalk on 19th Street, if those two sidewalks were parallel all the way down and it didn't bulb out a little bit for our buildings, then they just wouldn't fit. So I think RRM is doing a good job with the county to try to figure out to what extent the county will be flexible. And again, there's a little bit more work in terms of how will trucks get in and out or what will we have to do with trucks. But hopefully that's going to work. And once I see the traffic flow for big wheels and everything, if that works, then RRM will start proceeding with the rest of the work, which is some basic architectural looks and then cost estimates.
The existing shop, is it staying or does it?
No, so everything. Oh, that says existing shop. That's not really the shop, though. That's our barn. Yeah.
That's a barn?
Well,
It's an old airplane hangar.
Okay.
And they keep some of the equipment out of the elements.
That's going away?
No, that one's staying.
That's staying.
Okay.
There used to be a barn there, and then an airplane hangar went in.
So where they had that.
Surplus, no doubt.
Yeah. That's the one where we just got the termiting, and we did the roof on it too, didn't we, Tony?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we just had that one taken care of, but we figured we weren't going to do termiting and any roof work on the rest of the facilities. And that that's it for capital projects. Even though it's only one page, it's like the vast majority of my focus right now.
That's exciting.
Two more pages, administration. So at the last board meeting, we talked about some 2018 legislation that's out on the table. One is the water tax, and your board wanted to see that on the agenda in case you wanted to send a letter of support or opposition. So if you're so inclined, you can do that tonight, or to authorize the president. Alternatively, you can ask me to draft a letter and bring it back on the agenda. Or we can see how that legislation evolves a little bit.
I think you've got enough on your plate right now, Pavel.
Thank you. Well, and also the at this early point in the legislative season, we will see amendments and modifications.
Yes.
And the other thing we will often see is the California Special Districts Association ask us to provide comment letters at a specific point in time. And so one option is if you are inclined to oppose the water tax, you could authorize the president to respond to CSDA once they provide a call for letters, or we can put it on a future agenda item. Similarly, the other item is accessory dwelling units, and that's a new piece of legislation. And what the proposal is that if anybody builds granny units, then we would be prohibited from charging them for connection fees. We generate about $8,000, a little bit more than $8,000 for every secondary dwelling unit that's put on a piece of property. And so if that passes, that will certainly have an impact on our connection fees.
I don't understand how we could not charge them, because we're charging them for stuff that other people have paid for that they have to pay a share of. And I don't understand how the concept.
Yeah, and in the CSDA e-news, they indicated that there are some attorneys who are arguing that that would violate Proposition 218, because if we were to take the charge that we were otherwise imposing for the new dwelling units and made somebody else pay for it, they argue that it violates the proportionality rules of Prop 218. I'm not so convinced. Development fees themselves are called out as being exempt from Prop 218, and I'm not but the point is, whether they're right or wrong from a policy position, do you like the idea? And certainly it's pretty recognized that new development should pay for their fair share of impacts. So again, those are two that we would expect that CSDA is going to follow, and whether your board wants to do any direction now or wait for a future agenda is really your discretion. The third bullet on inverse condemnation is simply a court case, but I say simply. The importance of that one is that the facts are a structure was filled with sewage, or sewage backflowed into a structure, and the city, the municipality, did not dispute that they had a line blockage in their main, but the property owner apparently failed to put in a backflow device consistent with the municipality's standards. And so the municipality has said they should not be responsible for damages when the property owner failed to comply with the code standard or the standards. And the trial court and the decision was different than the appeals court. It's gone on to the Supreme Court. And so that case will be important to follow regarding the enforcement of our engineering standards. Because if it's deemed that the municipality is not liable, then it puts a greater burden on the property owners. If it's deemed that the municipality is liable, then it puts a greater burden on us to make sure and enforce our standards for those who are non-compliant.
I just had a question that do we do all of our own inspections? I mean, the county inspects the total package, but do we inspect the water and the sewer separately?
For our standards, we do today.
Uh-huh.
The history of the district, though, is that I would be very concerned about inspections in prior years. We've already seen, like when we had the discussion regarding Seabreeze, that a lot of those were constructed
hose clamps.
Yeah, with hose clamps and non-standards. And so what's in the ground that we don't know about is my bigger concern. And if it's found that the municipalities, you know, really have a bigger burden here, then it could drive some of the work that we need to do with the sewer system master plan that I was discussing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
President White, I'll just give a little color on this case because I think the summary's a little vague on certain points, and I have not read or followed the Supreme Court case, but I did read this e-news bulletin, and I think the real issue that probably is being addressed here is that you had a situation where had the parties put on this valve, it would have that they were required to do by local law and state law, it would have not resulted in this the damage to their property, and they didn't do it, and they sued. The issue here is that inverse condemnation doesn't allow consideration of comparative fault. And so generally in this situation, the parties in a normal case, under normal general principles of law, you would be able to allocate fault. Maybe it's partly some of the damage is partly on the result of the sewer blockage that would fall on the water company, but the majority of it would be on the property owner who could have prevented it had they done what they were supposed to do. But in inverse condemnation, because the judge does not look at comparative fault, if it's 1% on the water supplier, then that's enough to get them 100% on the hook for all the damage. So having not looked at the case, I'm trying to just put that into perspective, and that if the Supreme Court is looking at that issue, then that would have a significant impact on a potential liability in similar situations. Yeah. And it seems fair.
Thank you.
From a physical standpoint, we don't have as great of a risk of this type of a backup as other communities, but we still have the risk, so we need to be concerned about it. But a community that's really hilly is going to have a much greater risk because the flows out of a higher elevation property owner, if there's a blockage lower down, can easily then flood other homes that are in between. And I remember a number of years ago, there was a really big case in Avila where the house filled up like 2 feet full of sewage or something like that. It was just horrendous. So it is going to be an important case to follow to understand, where our ultimate responsibilities lie. So policies and procedures, this time last year we had done a lot of work on the board bylaws and some of the board policies, and really I haven't picked up much since then. And the two primary ones that we have to look at are human resources and then the rules and regulations. And so the human resources, the basic approach that I think is appropriate is to work closely with the SEIU, because any of the HR-related policies and procedures that we would be updating would require meet and confer anyhow. And because we've got the new MOU, where the meet and confer on that needs to start no later than May 1st, the plan is then to start addressing HR policies. I need to get ahead of it a little bit in April, but really working through with the union both any of the issues they put on table for the memorandum of understanding, as well as working through the human resources, human resource related policies. The other big work effort is our rules and regulations associated with the water and sewer system, and to a lesser extent with garbage. And I figured that that would just simply have to follow the HR ones and the SEIU. This gets back to the Seabreeze discussion. So I would anticipate that, you know, that's probably going to be later summer before we get the SEIU work fully addressed and the opportunity then to move into rules and regulations. Training is one of our goals, was one of our goals for 2017, and the goal included more utilization of the program that we have that's called Target Solutions, which we haven't had the time to get into, but I still wanted to address the training that we have completed. So we've done a good job of making sure to cost-effectively approach training. There's a dozen different training efforts that staff has done. This does not include the Special Districts Leadership Academy that we all attended last year. And a couple of these actually go back in a little bit into 2016. Again, a quick snapshot, and we have been doing, making sure that we've been doing a number of different training efforts with both field and office staff. And then some of the upcoming ones, I always put ongoing requirements because those are things like harassment prevention, ethics, and the other ones that the statutes require us to do. CSTI is training out at Camp San Luis associated with emergency response. And since we're doing the local hazard mitigation plan and we have some uncertainties about the future of fire and emergency services, where we've signed up myself, Carrie, Tony, and, well, Carrie. I thought there was four of us that signed up to go to CSTI. And Nicole. Yeah, because Nicole is helping with the local hazard mitigation plan. So that's about a week long of emergency training at Camp San Luis. And I'm wishing I could remember what that CSTI stood for right now.
California State Technical Institute, I think.
Yes.
My son's had all those classes. I read the books.
And so that's, again, some of the basics on emergency response. Looking at sending Casey and or Jason on black flow certification is one of their next training efforts. And then, of course, Target Solutions is the overall program that we still want to utilize for our training programs. But we haven't gotten there yet, but we are continuing to work with training program, work on
Who gets to take mathematics for water hydraulics?
Okay, those were taken. Those were completed. That was you, Tony? Yeah.
All right.
Website and outreach, the web go live. We were hoping that it was going to be Tuesday, and our consultant, who's doing a great job, had a birthday. We thought he was going to take a day off for his birthday, but it looks like it might be a week instead. So, again, I know I've been saying that for the last couple meetings. It's imminent.
That's why we didn't pay him.
Pardon me?
Why we didn't pay him.
Yeah, that's right, because we put it on the list because we thought we'd be going live on Tuesday, but we didn't, so we don't pay till it's live, so... Then on outreach, it said I have three acronyms, FCFA, WRRP, LHMP, a fourth one, ZNE, the Zero Net Energy. And in talking with the county's energy team today, what we're thinking about is we're going to target May. I have more discussion with your board before then. But rather than advertising it with a bunch of acronyms, what it really is water, energy, fire, and community hazards. So that's sort of the four topics of doing a comprehensive community town hall meeting.
I'm impressed.
Pardon me?
I said I'm impressed. Yeah.
We're going to see if we can get a big keynote speaker to come, too. somebody super notable.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, that's right, Elon Musk. I'm not commenting until we find out. And then moving to fiscal, finally. So under accounting and reporting, as mentioned, Carrie recently submitted to the state the financial transaction report. She had gone up to a training in Sacramento on that because they recently upgraded and it's all online now. And I think Carrie's comment was it was good. In fact, my comment was great because I asked her one day what her timing for submittal might be, and she said yesterday. She had already submitted it. So I was like, okay, I like that. Noted the reserve status is complete. That was what we talked about in the previous agenda item. The June 30, 2017 audit is underway. I would expect that's going to be done relatively timely. Already the question checklist that they've provided to us is it's a lot more efficient. We think this is going to be good. We're happy. Cash flow analysis is coming up. We've been doing quarterly treasury reports. We were able to start those this year, and those are going to be augmented with some information on cash flow on a fund-by-fund basis, which will help us with reserve evaluations and just monitoring cash flows for each of the funds. And then the last bullet is a miscellaneous accounting and reporting to do that we have, and that is reconciling will serve letters to public facilities fees. So public facilities fees that we get through our agreement with the county for our fire equipment and fire facilities, all that's directly a result of new development. Well, we issue will serve letters for new development. So we thought, hey, why don't we, novel idea, never been done before, why don't we track the will serve and the new development fees that we've been collecting and making sure that the public facilities fees for those same parcels are coming in from the county. So, again, not any sort of brainstorming big job there, but again, one of the details, again, to try to tie down some of the loose ends. On budgets, we're coming on our two-year preliminary budget review, so we're going to start that the second week in April, a second meeting in April, which is the same time you get your third quarter budget update. I have a bullet. We have some technical changes. We've generally alluded to those to the board in the past. We'll go through those. The big needs are really establishing the reserve policies. We're formalizing our staff processes in terms of equipment requests from operations, project requests, office requests for equipment. Our phone system is terrible. But really getting in the mode of formalizing the budget process. And also, as previously indicated, we've got the admin cost allocations that we want to look at for the next 2 years. Under fees, mixed-use development, that's still on the to-do list because our fee structure right now is based on residential or non-residential and doesn't really address mixed-use fees. When we've had those, the board has acted on a case-by-case basis. We've got little miscellaneous fees, like when a property owner keeps calling us back out to check to see whether or not they've got a leak. That's
first name basis.
Yeah. And then I'm anticipating around this time next year is where we do updated rate reviews for both water and sewer. Lastly, state water fee board fee dispute has been kind of a little bit of a frustrating item, probably more so for Nicole than for the rest of it, because she's the one who's really trying to resolve it. But both in 2017 and in the current year, State Water Board, for the division of drinking water that we pay a fee to for our water system, both years it's been billed to us as if we were not a disadvantaged community. And in 2017, we calculated what it would be for a disadvantaged community, and that's what we paid. And so they say we still owe more money, and then they charged us the full fees for 2018. And we said, but you all did the income survey that says that we're not a disadvantaged community. And then we got kind of a mean email from somebody at the State Water Board. And I was like, wow. And so the what we did is we've turned to RCAC again. RCAC is the firm that, or the nonprofit that did the income survey as funded by the State Water Board. And so Karen McBride said she'd try to track it down and figure out how to get the left hand and the right hand at the State Water Board to talk to each other, get communicating. I don't know if it's going to require any formal action by your board to send them a letter or not, so hopefully we'll get it resolved at the staff level. But it is kind of interesting because the tough email we got that says if you wanted it, you had to apply and get approved by the State Water Board. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, well, I thought that's what the income survey was all about. But apparently there might have been another step we weren't advised about. But again, RCAC is going to follow up and hopefully address that, because those aren't, you know, the fees from the Division of Drinking Water for our water system aren't cheap. You know, we're talking about, what, $5,000, $6,000 per year is the difference or something? Yeah.
I'll write a nasty letter.
Okay.
Nicely.
A nice nasty, yeah.
A nice nasty.
Well, so we're working through that dispute. And that is the summary of the priorities. Again, March is really focused about capital projects, but I'll get the recruitment for our solid waste coordinator going as well. And
well, that's your work for the rest of the year. Yeah. Anybody want to make any discussions on that? I'm tired just reading it.
Yeah. The whole effort of going through, we have a war board. I meant to show it to you when we were in closed session.
I saw it.
Yeah. I was starting to, you know, sometimes you get so many things going on, and we've gotten a lot of grant money, right? So now it's a matter of getting those program efforts moving, along with everything else that we have going on. And so I was last week a little bit stressing on what to do first. You know, if you have so many things on your plate, it's almost like Thanksgiving dinner, right? When that plate is so full, where do I start? So going through the exercise and, you know, re-looking at what are all the different priorities we have in front of us itself is a good exercise in order to get focused on what to do first and what to do second. So
it also gives us a complete list of what's going on, so that if people talk to us, we also are much better prepared. Yeah.
And we do. We have a lot of work going on right now. But I think our sequencing is going to be good.
Okay, moving on. No hearing items, I don't think. Received written communication or late written communication?
The only things that I've had, we've already discussed, and that's the LAFCO hearing that on fire operations, as well as the CSDA special election for the LAFCO alternate.
That can be put on the agenda.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do want to announce a coming event. Is this a good time to do that? San Luis County Sheriff's Office is going to host a town hall meeting here in Oceano. Give us an opportunity to speak with the sheriff and his staff, to share your concerns, learn about services of the Sheriff's Office. And it's open to everybody. It's at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, March 8th, at the Oceano Railroad Depot on Front Street. And a list of people that will be there, including District Attorney Dan Dow, Supervisor Compton, Sheriff's Advisory Foundation, Crime Prevention, Sheriff's Auxiliary, Volunteer Patrol, and Rural Crime Deputies. I know we had it about a year ago. 2 years ago, and I think it was 2 years ago, but it was very well received, and I think the people that listened to the Oceano residents were we got a lot of response from them. So I think if everybody can show up,
and that's next Thursday, right?
Next Thursday, March the 8th.
Yeah,
a week from tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, and.
Remind me.
Remind everybody. Future agenda items.
Oh, so there was one other piece of written correspondence.
Sorry.
That it's not really directly pertaining to the district business. It's more pertaining to the sanitation district. But there was a member of a public who had asserted that our vice president, Ms. Austin, had violated the some provisions of the Fair Political Practices Commission. So I did get a copy of the FPP letter that said that there was not essentially sufficient evidence to do any sort of investigation. So when the FPP, yeah, sorry. Okay, Jim, I'm going to tell them you sent it in. But the idea is when somebody alleges a Fair Political Practices violation, the first thing that they do is evaluate it, the receipt of the information as to whether or not they're going to do an investigation, if it's worthy of an investigation. And basically what was filed against Vice President Austin, FPPC said this is not worthy of an investigation and essentially, you know, just cleared the item and dismissed it. So
it was just a bunch of witch hunt things thrown out that had no... It was the FPPC's letter basically let her know that I had not done anything. And I had overstated what they said. I didn't state that I went above and beyond what I even had to do in the interest of transparency. So she just made her... And it was obvious that the complainant didn't understand the rules of the FPPC and what, you know, that she needs to learn how, what, before you turn someone in, you need to know what your, what the actual things are that they do, because it was complete, it was embarrassing for her. The things that she had on there were just ridiculous.
So, bottom line is, Vice President Austin was cleared without the need for an investigation. So...
Vindication.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Anything else? We've got our future agenda. We got our future walking orders. The heat went off on the building 3 hours ago.
Did it? I move we adjourn.
Second.
Moved and adjourned at 8:40. Stay and sign the checks. I'm assuming...
Okay.